For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Merengatang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throws and monkey sounds in there and called go.
The old like Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon.
Oh, ah, ah.
Hey, welcome in.
Oh, hi.
Happy Wednesday. How's everybody doing?
Oh, it's splendiferous.
Yeah, splendiferous. It's a Blazer game day, so you got to be happy.
I hope you all had a shitty day.
There you go.
Brian Kelly never disappoints. Actually, always disappoints.
Always disappoints.
Yeah.
No, I have to get all my happiness out now so that I can fully embrace my grumpy bear tonight.
Are you going to be grumpy? Is this okay? Do we need to address this? Are we going to go?
I'll wear it on the radio tomorrow, but I'm going to put it up to the camera so you can see it.
Oh, you actually are. Oh, wow.
It is a full like a legitimate size onesie grumpy bear costume.
I like this. Nothing is more fitting than you dressed as a grumpy bear.
I have makeup and for TV, and I'm debating taking said TV makeup and just drawing whiskers on my face.
I think you need to.
I think I do.
Right? I think you. Okay. Yeah, that's better than you going absolutely like blue face.
Well, no, they didn't do that. Like, there's like a little mask that comes with this. Like, I don't think they intended this when it originally came out. Like, because I got the costume during COVID.
What is it, like a snout?
It's like it has like a full on like painted grumpy bear face on the mask.
Gotcha.
But it's not really like a COVID mask, but it's kind of the same vein. But I think they maybe just intended it just to be a
Danny's
regular mask.
Danny's K95.
Yeah, exactly.
Costume.
Yeah. So.
All right. Hey.
I'm just wondering if my Lieutenant Dangle costume is going to be an HR violation.
Is that what you're...
I bought it years ago when Sandy was like a year
please
or two
tell
old
me
and I've
you
never
have...
worn it.
Please tell me you have white cowboy boots.
I don't.
That
that's the only. That's
too.
The thing I'm missing. I need the white cowboy boots, and I need the I need the cop shades. But I definitely need the boots for some new boot goofing. And yeah,
Reno 911. I love that show.
Oh, just tremendous!
It was so good.
So good. So good.
Nick Swardson was electric in it. The whole cast
I was murdered.
That was a really good cast. They cast that show perfectly.
Yes.
It was they did a really good I love Reno 911.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of my favorites.
I believe Dangle and Junior were like the creative forces behind the show.
Okay.
Which, you know, makes some sense, but It's tremendously underrated.
It doesn't matter though. Every time I hear Lieutenant Dangle, I still will go back to Forrest Gump, Lieutenant Dan, then I have to reprogram completely opposite.
Yeah.
Dangle and Lieutenant Dan, not the same.
Yeah, just
not the
merge
same.
The two to get together. Lieutenant Dangle, you got new boots.
Yeah, we've got a lot that we need to get to today, guys. We got a lot that we got to get to.
No,
we
not
got
at
idiot.
All.
It's quiet. We got idiot fans. We've got. We will have story time with Uncle Jerry. Jerry
See,
Allen is
so weird
be
how they were Yankee
us.
Fans too.
Yes, we will dive wholly into idiot Yankee fans. And hey, how about the Yankees actually winning a game in the World Series? Huh?
Hmm.
Hey, congrats, guys!
They got one. Yeah,
they didn't get smoked.
No, no, they didn't at all. No sweep. I'm here for it. I love it.
Sun even shines on a dog's arse some days.
We've got some Blazers and some NBA that we need to get into today. A lot of football, including a trade deadline that this could get a little bit spicy. And I've got a theory on one team that I want to bounce off of you guys because it could be a mysterious trade deadline. But if my conspiracy is right, I think it will all make sense. And then I got to get this out of the way, though. Next Tuesday cannot come fast enough.
Oh.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, they're coming more fast and more furiously than they have for a couple weeks.
We need to address these political ads are ridiculous. Watching the World Series last night, it was... you almost had to change the channel in between innings. It's nonstop. And
which you can't do if you're a cord cutter.
Riddle me this, Batman.
Mm-hmm.
When is the last time you saw a political ad that was actually discussing what any of the candidates are running on their platform? Because I watched 3.5 hours of baseball last night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And all I learned is that no matter who you vote for,
everyone's bad.
They're all bad.
The other person is an a-hole.
They all are supporting rapists or going in getting abortions, but against abortion. They are all for transgender or just completely against transgender people.
Letting immigrants come in and murder everybody.
It was relentless, yeah, and it is not one side of the aisle, and nobody should be like, bah! No, this is an attack on both political parties, political parties. It's all it
one
is.
Here. The one here.
Ridiculous.
I keep getting the Portland City Council ads popping up, which is funny because I can't vote for that because I don't live in Portland, but...
My favorite is you watch college football and it's all about like the Texas Senate race.
Yeah, whatever state the game's being played in. Yeah, it's like, what the hell is this? Like,
doesn't apply to me.
Like, why are you doing national advisor? This is weird. But like the one thing that I've learned is that every candidate for that office is a terrible, terrible human. Like,
yes.
Like not even like there's zero redemptive qualities. It's just nothing but hit piece after hit piece. And the thing is like, I tend to think they actually are terrible humans because the stuff that you hear, and it's from everyone, and you just kind of go down the list of it, and you're like, oh, these people suck. And it's just like, there's no, like, in the past, you can maybe get mildly excited for a candidate of like, oh, this person's different.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't been in politics for 40 years, and they don't have 100 unpaid parking tickets, and there isn't video of them backing into somebody in a parking lot and then just walking past and ignoring it. And I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is going on here? It's just, it's so, so weird.
I find it funny because there are two people that I went to college with that are running locally.
Ah.
Okay.
There is Tobias Reed, who is, I believe, for Secretary of State. He lived across the hall from me in Matthews Hall at Willamette my freshman year.
All right.
And then,
you guys took different paths.
Yes, we did. And then Rene Gonzalez, he was one of my fraternity brothers at Beta Theta Pi down at Willamette, running for mayor.
Wow.
Yeah, we're a little bit on the opposite side of the spectrum there, but...
Look at you. Look at Rust, though. See, that's what happens when you don't go to a directional school. I did not have any people that I lived across the hall from that are running for office currently. You know?
Yeah. You know, I know people that have been in office in various states, and I just keep my mouth shut because those are guys that I did very terrible things with.
Oh,
and I go,
okay.
I trust you.
We can. The funny thing is that with both Tobias Reed and Gabe, we called him Gabe. It was Rene Gabriel Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we called him Gabe. With Tobias, we could tell that he was going to be, like, even then, I could tell he was going to be a politician. And then Rene was, like, our chapter president for a year or so, too. And
that always feels like a problem. You know, like, if you can tell someone's going to be a politician.
Yeah.
I'm like,
when they're 20 years old.
That's not good.
Yeah. But no, so far as I can tell, he's been I think he's currently the treasurer for the state of Oregon.
Wow.
Is Tobias Reed. But yeah.
Got his hands in the money, huh?
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's my rant on these commercials that we're watching because it's not about, it's just why you shouldn't vote for them. I have no idea why I should vote for you, but just don't vote for
them. Just don't vote for this person.
Just don't vote for them. Golly. It really is. We are living in a full season of Parks and Rec. That's what we're doing right now. And that's sad because that's a satirical show.
Yeah, like that's not supposed to be real.
Yeah. And that's back-to-back days. We have the pollution of the Sweetums factory from our worst day on the web yesterday where it was a tomato factory. And now we have the political ads. Go negative. Go negative. Just dive in all negative all the time. Let's go.
Terry Crews for president.
Could you imagine, though, like if you, I don't know, like if it's your parent or your, like your aunt or your uncle and they're like, wow. You're like a kid just sitting there like, goodness gracious, why are they talking about Uncle Danny like that?
Well, with me, they'd know. They'd know.
Oh, man. All right. So I can't wait for Tuesday. Actually, I probably can because it'll get better. We got a lot that we got to get to. We want to start with the who. Where do we even start with this show? Because we got Uncle Jerry coming up at 12:30.
Yeah,
Jerry Allen will join us at 12:30. I'm looking forward to that. It'll be a fun chat because we got a big game. I don't know if you knew about this. Oregon is going to Michigan. They're going to the Big House. These are one of the venues that a lot of people have been looking forward to. So I'm excited for it. And Jerry was on the call for the last time they were there back 2007. I don't know if you guys remember Statue of Liberties.
Oh, was that a thing?
Two of them in the Big House. So Jerry will join us at 12:30. Let's start with idiot fans. Do you want to? Let's go.
I think it's a good place.
Let's go idiot fans because that seems to be the story of the day in the world of sports. What we saw last night, it truly was the worst of fandom.
And the best?
Was it the best as well? Danny and Dusty on the Fan. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We get a Game 5 in the World Series. Thank goodness. The New York Yankees avoided the sweep last night at home. 11-4, the dam broke against the Dodgers. But how about that Freddie Freeman? Six straight World Series with the home run.
Still pretty good.
Oh, my goodness. It is so fun. When you get a guy who is on a heater and a guy who's just locked in like that, where every time he steps to the plate, you expect greatness to happen, and then he delivers in almost relatively quickly in every account, right? After game one, I think everybody, when you have a walk-off grand slam and everybody's like, well, that's three straight World Series games that, dating back to his days in Atlanta. Freddie Freeman's hit a home run. Everybody just starts expecting it, and then the dude just lives up to the billing time and time again. That is the greatness of sports. It's like Dame late in a game,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, Freddie Freeman doing this, six straight home runs, all-time record. And then also having...
Is that good?
Yeah, that's it's insane. Six straight games with a home run in the World Series, which, number one, it shows you his ability to get back to the World Series, but also the only walk-off grand slam in the history of the World Series. Like, you're doing things on the biggest stage in your sport that literally nobody else has done, and the World Series has been around for
120
years. Yeah. Yeah, so... When you're doing something in a sport that's been around that long, that just shows you just how rare of an air it is.
Yeah.
And how he's solidified himself. I mean, he's already a Hall of Famer when you're an MVP and a World Series winner. You're going to find your way there. But now he's solidified himself as a absolute no doubter, like, you know, not a Mount Rushmore guy, but like sitting up on the top of Mount Olympus, as it were, a you know, Greek god status of baseball.
He is at that point, and look, he is worthy of Hall of Fame prior to this, but I mean, then you have these moments, you have mm-hmm. these clutch postseason moments. He is now becoming surefire, no doubt. But in that game, it wasn't just Freddie Freeman getting the Dodgers out to an early 2-0 lead with the first inning home run. It was what happened in the bottom of the first inning that Yankee fans are saying is the spark to what could be the most improbable comeback of all time. And it is based off of, I think everybody can agree, one of the most idiotic moments of all time. Bottom of the first inning, no outs, Gleyber Torres up to bat, a fly ball into foul territory down the right field line. Mookie Betts goes up for this ball.
Drive right by Torres. Betts in the corner. Does he have room? Fights with the fan. And they're going to say that it's an out and fan interference.
Joe Davis on the call for Fox last night.
Pretty innocuous call there, considering what happened.
Boy, Joe Davis, though, in the moment, I could feel John Smoltz in his anger without saying a word.
Mm-hmm.
Because Joe Davis was like, oh, yeah, look at that fan. He's wrestling with Mookie Betts. Grabs Mookie Betts' glove and just starts raking at it.
Just has the jaws of life on it.
Meanwhile, his bro wearing sunglasses in at 8:30 at night in New York grabs Mookie's throwing hand and is like holding him up, and they're just raking at the ball, and they finally pop it out and they're like, what, he dropped the ball?
And that dude, he looked like the most Yankee fan of Yankee fans ever
you've ever seen. Yeah,
just, and I believe I saw in the ESPN article, the guy's name was like Joey Capobianco.
No, it's Austin
Capobianco.
It's Austin Capobianco.
Yeah,
and he's the most New York fan of New York fans,
yes,
that you could ever expect. And did you see his reaction when the umpire came down the line? The umpire mm-hmm. starts to talk to him about like, what, like, dude, you're out of here. You can't do that. And he was like, what? He came into the stands. Like it's almost his territory. Like, it was totally fine for him to rip the ball out of the glove. At that point, I was just like, oh boy. And that is the worst of fans. If Mookie Betts, like, cussing him out, dude, this guy's lucky that's all that happened with Mookie Betts. Because when you grab him by the wrist and his buddy tries to hold him into the stands and hold off his offhand with the other one, dude, all bets are off at that point.
Yeah.
Imagine if that had happened courtside at an NBA game.
Yeah, Ron Artest is tearing your head off and spitting down your neck.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the NBA, what, popcorn. Remember popcorn getting mm-hmm. dumped on? That was, people were calling for assault on that. This dude, Capobianco, actually grabbed Mookie Betts and tried to hold him in and pull him into the stands to get the ball out, right? And on the surface, and I think we can all agree, like, that's the worst of fandom, right? It's like, you're actually trying to interfere with the game, and this isn't like, you know, remember Orioles kid who pulled one over the fence?
Yeah, Jeffrey, what was it? But it was Tony Tarasco that he interfered with.
Yeah, but that was like, you know, an innocent mistake. Steve Bartman, right? That's a guy who made a mistake, and he got exiled from Chicago as a city as a whole, had to change his identity.
That's tough.
Right? But that was like something that was innocent and accidental.
As opposed to the most purposeful version of this we've ever seen.
This was
totally intentional.
Egregious.
Totally intentional. And it also is like, isn't that what being a fan is? Like fanatical? Being irrational about your team and being irrational about the moment, right? That's what being a fan is.
I feel like there are maybe like two or three other cities where or baseball towns where you could see this happening. Los Angeles, I don't believe, is one of them. Boston, sure. Philly, absolutely.
Yeah.
And maybe like a Chicago. But outside of that, you know, it's like, I mean, I can't see this happening in Pittsburgh or in Miami.
I think when you go Chicago, the south side of Chicago, like Cubs fans have such PTSD from Bartman.
Yeah, yes.
They don't want anybody being in. They don't want any glove entering the field of play at any time.
Well, but the south side, they just don't want to win 100 or lose 121 games again.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. The thing that was amazing to me out of it was the reaction to and how actually split it was, but amongst Yankee fans and the rest of the public, because people were asking for them to be barred from baseball stadiums across the country for life, right?
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, it's obviously the Yankees were like, "Man, it's fine," until the Major League Baseball forced them to keep them out.
Well, and it was, look, if it was just a thing where you tried to go and reach for the ball and such, but it was, I didn't see the video until this morning when I got here.
Oh, he jaws of life.
And I looked, and yeah, and that's, no, and I think he absolutely should be barred from every stadium in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and what they're saying and from the Yankee statement is that the fans will not be permitted to attend tonight's game in any capacity for their egregious and unacceptable incident with Mookie Betts, right? That's just tonight.
Well, it's a starting point. You got to at least start with that and then go back and review and look and see if you need to amend things and how much more you got to do.
And I wonder if Major League Baseball will eventually step into it. In a Major League Baseball will take action, because if Major League Baseball takes it out of the Yankees' hands, the Yankees are also, as an organization, they're dealing with this split that I was floored at. The Athletic had an article from their writer that was in the building, and this is a direct quote from a fan who talked to Capobianco as he was leaving the stadium, said, "I told him he was my hero for trying to save the Yankees. It's the championship game." Like, there is an actual split of people who are like, "No, totally fine. He's just trying to help the team win." Nobody in there, think about that with a rational mind. Nobody thinks that play was acceptable.
But if it were, exactly, but if it were against the Yankees, those Yankees fans would be like, "Ban that guy for life from everywhere. String him up, tar and feather." Yeah.
And here's the crazy part of all of this, I think, is if somehow the Yankees were able to Red Sox this and become the first team to ever do this, that guy probably gets, you know, a statue built in Monument Park.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, as dumb as this all is, it's like,
if somehow
that's the rally point.
You know, if somehow, some way they do, like, do the unthinkable and they win this series, and like, you know, if Aaron Judge in that single that he hit in the eighth inning where he got an RBI, finally he got a hit. It should be noted, the game was 10-4 in the bottom of the eighth inning at that point, right? But all the pressure was off. He got a hit. If that snaps him out of his slump, if Judge, Soto, Stanton, and Torres just go on this tear and they somehow, some way, Garrett Cole goes out and pitches a gem tonight, like, and they bounce back and they do the unthinkable, they do the improbable, they pull an 0-4 Red Sox in the ALCS and they erase the 0-3 hole, this dude will be a legend in New York forever.
I heard Swag, I think it was yesterday morning, say that in the World Series, no team down 0-3 has ever gone on to even force a Game 6, let alone a Game 7.
So, yeah.
No, yeah, we said that yesterday.
Did we say that yesterday? All right. You know. Hey, look, I get lost doing podcasting stuff.
No,
you know?
No, it's okay. That's the thing. Is like, it's were they the fourth team to force a Game 5? Down 3-0?
Yeah, so it's like, I think like, it might be the fifth.
It's four, either way, it's fourth or fifth. Like, it's just, it doesn't happen. Yeah.
And there's been a lot of World Series.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, anytime you start like hearing like numbers like that around the World Series, like, yeah, this kind of, because, I mean, when you get to this point, you're supposed to be the best team from your league or playing the best at that particular time. And so, you know, you don't typically run into these kind of situations. So
yeah, they are the fourth. You're correct. A four-game sweep has happened 21 times. Five games, the series has been over three times. Now heading into the fourth Game 5 ever. So, I mean, it doesn't happen very often. And
crazy.
Yeah, but they've got Garrett Cole on the hill tonight, and they're going to try to keep this bad boy alive. And that's a wild part about this, is that those guys, full stop, complete idiots, but they will be viewed as heroes if... I might ask you this. If they force a game six and become the first team to force a game six, do you think these guys get propped up in New York lore?
Probably. Probably.
Because they're already trying to right now.
Yeah, they'll get a deli sandwich named after them at multiple places in the city.
In New York, that's a high honor, man.
Yeah, I know.
That's like getting a Thai dish named after you here in Portland. Like, you know,
Danny's angling for that now. He's angling for it now.
Bro, I went to that Eames spot yesterday night before last. I got something to go. And my wife is like, I'm not feeling very good. I'm like, oh, darn. I guess I'm going to have to eat that myself. And, you know, for being a tremendously white city, we have, like, the best Thai food of any, like, major city in this country.
If it's a certain kind of Thai spot at the corner of 185th and West Union is listening, I would love to find an order of Rust fish sauce wings.
Told you. Right there.
What would be a more tremendous honor, getting... your like favorite food that you like whatever it is, yeah, being named after you at a restaurant, mm-hmm, or having like a restaurant that is supremely popular, like an iconic, like I know Gino's isn't like the best cheesesteak spot in Philly, but it's the one everyone knows.
Yeah.
Like, would you rather have a
well, there's two, there's Gino's and what? There's two, there's
Pat's?
I think that's, yes, yeah, there we go. Gino's and Pat's. Like,
would you rather have an iconic restaurant have something on the menu for you, or would you rather have like your favorite dish in the city at a smaller place be named after you?
Well, see, I'm going to go favorite dish, because like you can have a sandwich named after you, but if it's not at a really good spot and you don't like it, mm-hmm, I mean,
then it's just clout, right?
But yeah. I feel like if you're a Philadelphian and you have one of the two most famous Philly spots naming that sandwich after you, and you're a Philadelphian, I have a feeling you love a Philly.
But what if you're like an icon, like you are a true dyed-in-the-wool Philly, like Philly sports fan, mm-hmm, but you're also a true dyed-in-the-wool Philly cheesesteak fan, and you're like, no, Gino's or Pat's is not it. It's got to be like the niche market spot down the street, mm-hmm, the corner store where they, you know, it's just not quite as popular, but everybody knows, right, that's where you really go. And I just always like think about that. Like, what would you, not always think about that.
The hidden gem.
These are the dumb things that go through my head. Like, which would you rather have? And I think it's.
Yes.
I think I'm with Dusty. Yes. But yeah. I think I'm with Dusty. I think I'd rather just have my spot of the thing that I love.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like the more prominent restaurant.
And I guess I would like to say that I would hopefully if somebody decides to honor me with a dish or a sandwich.
You get some input.
I get some input.
There you go.
Well, it's even better though, in my opinion, if you're like, hey, go to this spot, ask for the Dusty.
Right?
Right, yeah.
Which is a giant pickle sandwich.
Yeah, no, it's not. Actually, there was a cafe that my parents sold it to this gal, Colin, and she named a breakfast dish, Dusty's Dilemma, after me.
Mm.
And that was like, it was like, hey, you're going to want to go there, get the Dusty's Dilemma. And that there's something about that that's a lot better than, you know, if you go anywhere and, you know, if everybody knows the place, you just get lost in the menu, right? And you're probably not the go-to item. So I'd like the go-to item, or I'd like the go-to or off-the-menu item at a secret hole-in-the-wall place. That's where I'd want to go.
Like a Helvetia Tavern?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, like that. Like that place. All right. Hey, I know a guy who likes food. He could answer this question. The voice of the Ducks, Jerry Allen. He's going to join us coming up next. Oregon, getting ready for a visit to the Big House, and a place that Oregon has had success before. Is success waiting for him this time around? First is Rust with SportsCenter. And Dusty, and this is a Eugene edition. Well, I'm in Eugene. Danny is still back in the studio. Every Wednesday I'm coming down to Oregon practice, and as many times as we can, we want to catch up with the voice of the Ducks, Jerry Allen. A little story time with Uncle Jerry. How you doing, Jerry?
Go Dodgers.
You're a Dodgers fan?
Oh, man. Yeah.
You're a big Dodgers fan?
I'm a big Dodger fan. Yeah.
How do you feel about last night?
I expected it.
Yeah. Well, it's a bullpen game.
Yeah.
Doesn't that bother you? That bothers me
that
we have bullpen games now in the World Series.
Yeah. There's a lot of things about modern baseball that bother me, but that's one of them.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, hopefully you guys can get it. Are you a
heard you talk about Mookie Betts in that play.
Yeah, we did. Have you ever seen anything like it?
You see fans. I mean, in the was it game one? Torres hit would have been probably a home run or questionable. Same player, same batter, and the fan caught it.
Right.
So you see stuff like that happen. I mean, yeah.
What is the wildest thing you've seen while calling a game?
Probably when you see, some of those things.
I'll say that you might not be safe on some of those.
Yeah, but if it's a really hot day, you know, and it's really a bright sunshine and students are out. But no, probably the craziest is when somebody, you know, an outfielder races to the wall to make a catch in foul territory and does the flip and comes up with the ball. Those are, you know.
That is crazy.
Those are guts. Those are guts plays.
All right, Michigan. You've been there before. 07.
2007.
Two Statue of Liberty plays.
And they both worked.
What?
One was a Statue of Liberty. One was a fake.
Yeah. To Jonathan Stewart on the first one.
Right. Yeah.
And then Dennis Dixon on the second one. I actually heard the call. The football program put out the video of, and I was right there with you because everybody thought that ball was gone when Dennis pulled it and took it into the end zone.
Yeah. 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 I mean, he hid that ball. I mean, it was perfectly executed. And to do it two times in the same game and have it work? No, come on. That's like the hidden ball trick in baseball, getting the guy out at first base twice in the same game. You're not going to see that.
No. Michigan was in a bad way that year.
And it's too bad because Oregon was good, and we knew that the Ducks were good, and we're hoping to go back to Michigan and take them down as the first team to take. But App State beat them the week before, so it took a lot of the pizzazz out of Oregon beating Michigan. But App State beat them the week before, so Michigan's not very good. Oh, come on. They weren't.
It happens.
It was 100,000 people, and it's the quietest it's ever been.
Really?
In a football stadium. All you could hear was Duck fans yelling, "Go Ducks."
That's a great feeling.
No, it was. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. But it was good. Now, Michigan was going through a transition, which a lot of teams do. Oregon has done the same thing, had great years, then go through a transition and come back, and they obviously got it back. They're the defending national champion.
Yep.
So,
What's it like to call a game when you've got that massive humanity? When you've got that many people just making up the environment. Because as loud and crazy as Autzen gets, and it does, you've got half the people. When you're talking about a place like Michigan or Ohio State where it's just, is there something different about just seeing that many people there for an event?
Yeah, it's, I don't want to say unnerving, but not even claustrophobic is not the right word. But when you're in amongst that number of people, and my mind goes there because I'm a science fiction nut, so I'm always thinking about things happening. So I'm thinking, if something happens, where am I going to go? How am I going to get out? You know, what's this going to be like? I mean, like, do I just hide in a corner and hope nobody runs over me, or do I get squashed in the mad rush? But it is a little unsettling. It is.
I'm glad that you said that, because I think that's one of those things that everybody kind of goes through where you go, am I the only person thinking of this right now?
No.
But I think every human being goes through the, all right, how am I getting out of here? How am I going to be the one to get out of here first?
The old Husky Stadium, before they remodeled, the press box was suspended underneath the grandstands. And when it got to be a really big part of the game, the fans would just go crazy, and the press box would swing the whole box. And Brian Mulvison was behind me in, I think, our last year up there. Well, here's the press box. One year up there, and we got holes through the plates, the steel plates in the floor. We looked down, you could see the fans down below.
No way.
This is uncomfortable. Next time we went up, they got carpeted solids. I said, that's nice. And I was talking to one of the guys. He said, yeah, the holes are still there. They just put carpet over it. So anyway, it's shaking. Mulvison's behind me, and I said, I tell you what, I think this thing is going down. If it does, you better get your ass out of the way because I'm going right that way fast. And I was serious. I was serious. Jorgie and I were like, this is not good. Yeah. Great memories.
New Husky Stadium's great,
it's
though.
It's a beautiful stadium. Nice. Huskies have one of the most beautiful stadiums in the nation. Yeah, so.
What is your favorite place that you've been to? Outside of Autzen Stadium.
Probably Camp Randall.
Oh.
Yeah. No, Wisconsin gets it right. Their fans, when they jump, you're going to love it. Have you been there?
No, I've never been there.
You're going to enjoy it.
We got a couple weeks to go.
They do a good job. They do a good job.
And then do you have, like, what was your favorite Pac-12 stadium to go to? Rest in peace, former Pac-12.
Yeah, that's a great question. I really did not like going to Tempe in Arizona. I mean, not Tempe, but Tucson.
Tucson.
That was not a good experience. Their fans were, their fans, if you're in Arizona, were unbelievably great. If you're an opponent, it was horrible. Best stadium. You know, Memorial Stadium at Cal.
Yes, I was going to mention that. Yeah. Berkeley does not get enough credit.
No, I don't. It's an old-style football stadium. It's built right in the middle of a fault. But you look out the back of the press box, and all you see is San Francisco Bay, the skyline, and the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, it is Strawberry Sweet. Canyon.
And yeah. Tightwad Hill.
And Tightwad Hill and the cannon sitting up there that scares you. Every time it fires.
That's the only Pac-12 place. The other one that's the only other Pac-12 place I've ever been to for a game, and it was a fantastic. It was a Saturday night game. It was great.
Oh yeah.
You mentioned the fault line, though. Of course, then going back to the having a strategic plan out. Of course, you bring up the fault line there. Right. It's built right on a fault line. No. You knew that.
Yeah. So. But we don't have to worry about that anymore.
No, not one bit.
You got something, Jesse?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. As the Ducks get ready for Michigan, this is it's kind of weird how this season has flipped on its head, because at the beginning of the year, there are two games everybody was excited for, everybody was looking forward to: Ohio State, Michigan, because Ohio State, everybody knew was going to be good, defending national champs. On Michigan, this was where the season was. It was kind of weird last week having the top 25 matchup be Illinois.
Yeah.
And this one be against a 4-3 Michigan team. As the fans have kind of all adjusted to it, I think it's really interesting how you see this team every day. They have taken that business-like approach, and we've talked about it on the show. It's almost like it's cult-like. In the way that they buy into what Lanning is preaching on the week-to-week basis.
I almost look at Oregon as a football program and their team, their players, as an NFL team. They go to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
They don't worry about the rankings in the NFL. They don't worry about, you know, anything other than their next game, preparing for it, and getting ready to hopefully be in the postseason. And that's kind of the mindset.
Yeah.
It's very uncollegiate-like.
And that seems to be the biggest difference between this year and what we've seen in years past, though, too, because Chip Kelly tried to have that.
Yeah.
But the program was at a point where they'd never been ranked number one before.
They weren't used to it.
They weren't going to New Year's Six Bowls, and the fan base was overwhelming with the, no, this is different. This has got to be different. That seems to be the biggest difference between the program now as opposed to 14 years ago or 10 years ago when they went to the second national championship game.
Yeah, I don't think back then it was being number one doesn't mean anything. Being in the top 10 doesn't mean anything. Back then, they were enjoying it. They were living it. The fans were living it. The players were living it. And I don't think Chip really tried to downplay that. I think he was, you know, hey, we've earned this. This is cool. Let's talk about it. I don't mind being asked that. But Coach Lanning and his staff understand that those things don't mean anything. I mean, he's got me drinking the Kool-Aid, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, okay. I believe.
Because one game undoes everything you've got. You know, the goals are still there. You can still get to where you want to be. But you have to take each week seriously and not look ahead and realize how vulnerable you can be if you don't play your best. How he has gotten that across to them, that's the magic of a head coach who gets it.
All right. I got a couple questions for you, and you're going to stick around whether you like it or not.
Okay, I'll do that then.
because what we're seeing with this team is pretty dang special, and I think there's one position group that may not be getting the notoriety that it deserves on the national stage. Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks, he joins us. We roll on. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks, joining us. And I got a question for you, Jerry.
Go Dodgers.
Right now, go Dodgers. You just start every sentence, go Dodgers. The Oregon Ducks, they got a pretty good one, Dylan Gabriel, behind center right now. You go back and you look at this quarterback position, there have been the hiccups, right? You know, the transition between, you know, Marcus Mariota and finally landing on Justin Herbert, where you had Vernon Adams, Dakota Prukop in there. There have been rocky spots at the quarterback position. But when you go down this run of Dylan Gabriel, Bo Nix, Anthony Brown, who has had a NFL career,
yeah,
still, albeit as a backup, and then you have Herbert, Mariota, and the list just kind of keeps going on and on. Does this current run of quarterbacks kind of get lost in how productive Oregon has been at that position over multiple head coaches?
Well, I would say yes, it gets lost because you never hear anybody talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, none of the major networks, ESPN, nobody's done a story on the success, recent history, going back to Fouts. Even you mentioned Norm Van Brocklin. And look at the number of quarterbacks that have gone on to the NFL, had success in the NFL, and most recently are really having success. Nobody talking about it. So I would say it's way overlooked.
Yeah, I remember, and we brought this up during the break because I kind of posed this question to you during the break. Jason Quick wrote an article back in 2013, actually October 29th of 2013, while he was with the Oregonian.
That's
kind of scary. Yeah. And at that time, Kellen Clemens had gotten into a game for the Rams and attempted a pass. That extended a streak to 65 years of an Oregon Duck attempting a pass in the NFL every year.
And there's nobody close.
The next closest was Washington at 30, and their streak has since ended.
That's crazy.
Oregon's has continued because Mariota took over as a starter in 2014, and then Justin Herbert came in, and he has kind of taken the helm. Anthony Brown has attempted pass. Obviously, Bo Nix now in the NFL. So every single year since 1949, an Oregon Duck has attempted a pass in the National Football
That's a
League.
Crazy stat.
I would have thought Alabama or USC.
Those are the
two that I would have gone with, because even though that neither university has produced, you know, the high-end NFL quarterbacks, they just seem to end up being journeymen, but they just seem to linger and hang around for year after year after year. They have, you know, backups or stepping into a spot. That the Ducks have a streak that long is just, that's nuts.
Yeah, I would never have thought it, because, look, we think of Oregon's success in football, and it kind of really started with Bill Musgrave making a bowl game in the late 80s, right?
89, yeah, going to the Independence Bowl.
And then before that, though, it was some dark years, some lean years.
Yeah, but part of the reason, I think, really, that you don't look at Oregon as quarterback U is because one of the first things that people look at is how many national championships, how many, you know, mm-hmm. conference championships through that period of time have they won. And when you don't see many of those, you assume they couldn't have had too many good players unless you do a deeper dive and research on it. So, yeah, Oregon had Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, they've won the national championship, so they automatically draw attention to those players.
Yeah.
Oregon hasn't.
Yeah, and I mean, like, outside Norm Van Brocklin and Dan Fouts, there hasn't been this overwhelming success of the quarterbacks either.
No.
Right?
No.
But to Danny's point, and like, you know this with USC quarterbacks, mm-hmm. I mean, you can be a really good college quarterback and produce NFL quarterbacks. It's what they do when they're gone is out of your control.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you just go down the list of USC quarterbacks for the last 15 years. And you've, like, Sam Darnold's the only one where I was like, yeah, I can see him being an NFL guy. I mean, ever since Leinart was the last one. Leinart was the last one to leave there, where I was just like,
to think that,
yeah, you know what I mean. Like, but the rest of them, like, yeah, you know, I mean, Caleb obviously is the you know, the brand new one, but that, I think he's a little bit different. But before that, you know, you just didn't have. You had your John David Booties, and you had, I mean, after Carson Palmer, you met Leinart was like the last one, and then it just kind of became the, you know, hell, they had a backup quarterback that, you know, got a gig behind Tom Brady, you know? It's just, yeah, it's just one of those things you're like, how does this happen? But as far as like keeping a streak like that alive at a university that, you know, wasn't really known for quarterback play for that long is kind of a testament to where this thing started more than anything else, I think. Because, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Bilotti and Chip and the love that they get, and rightfully so, but it started before that. You know, you had to, they didn't just, you know, prop themselves up out of nowhere. So that's one of the more, like, that's a stat that I would 100% get wrong at trivia.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't even cross my mind. That's what's crazy about that.
When you start with Norm Van Brocklin, I think about that, and I'd forgotten a guy like Tom Blanchard. I went to high school with Tom Blanchard.
You know? Did you forget him?
Or Tom, holy cow. Yeah, he was in the NFL, but I remember Tom as a punter,
yeah,
not a quarterback, but he did play quarterback in the NFL, too.
Yeah, he was, Saints, right?
I want to say, gosh, I feel like New York, the Giants, oh, okay, or something like that. You know, yeah, there you go. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm old. I don't have memory. Well,
my dad went played here with Tom.
Oh yeah,
and then ended up recruiting his son Tommy from Grants Pass.
It was really good.
And they played up at Lewis and Clark.
Giants, Saints, and Buccaneers.
Hey, look at that! Okay. Look at that! We're both right.
We're both right.
Yep. And then Jimmy Blanchard was a star at Portland State. I think he was an All American up at Portland State. The Blanchard family's pretty good.
Oh yeah, yeah. They were above average.
Yeah. And then I think Tom was a head coach, athletic director at Grants Pass High School for a lot of years.
Coached softball, too, there a lot. I mean, the whole family was just, they were so good athletically, but they were even better as people. Or you know, you hear that said a lot about players, but they were the real deal. They really were.
And you forgot about them.
On national radio. I consider this to be national radio.
Hey, technically we are.
Yeah. It's global because it's on YouTube.
Mm. Oh, that's
so
true.
Anybody watching around the world.
Okay. Hi to all the folks in Russia. Appreciate you being with us.
Isaac and Sue get picked up in Norway.
Yeah. You know that AM radio signal, it can go over the globe sometimes.
It bounces around. Yeah.
We get a lot of ham radio requests. Please send a bumper sticker our way. The travel for the Ducks. What have you made of the travel? Because everybody's talked a lot about it nationally. And we went on that trip to Purdue. It's a long trip, but it didn't seem like it was that much different than some of the other ones.
No, maybe an hour longer. It stretches a little bit. You put an extra movie on the iPad or you take a nap. I mean, basketball trips and baseball, when we would travel back east or go to Florida or go to Connecticut, you adapt, you get used to it. I mean, it's if you were going every week to the other side of the country, an issue.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But no, they're young, too. You're young.
Hey, I'm 40.
You're a kid.
Yeah, all right.
You're a grown man. You're 40.
I am. I'm a man. I'm 40. All right.
Heard that before.
Yeah. Right. Well. Ducks head up to Michigan. Are you ready for the game? Are you ready for this one?
Yeah, I'm ready for this one. I'm not concerned. I'm ready for it. I think the team's ready for it. But I think something that people overlook is something that you're going to hear more often now is that Oregon is a physical football team.
Yeah.
Their physicality is that's being talked about. So now teams are not only getting ready for the finesse game, but now teams are going to challenge Oregon's physicality. So Michigan, Michigan's going to say, hey, these guys are not going to out-tough us on our field. So that's what Oregon will face now the rest of the way is that standard of physicality.
A little bully mentality.
A little bit, yeah.
It's the one thing that you remember Chip Kelly said that very first Rose Bowl. He wanted guys that looked like Ohio State's. Because they didn't have them at that time.
I remember that. Their linebackers were big, but they were fast.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Jerry, thank you for the time, man. Yeah. Really appreciate you carving out a few minutes for us.
Enjoy.
Coming
go,
up here.
Go Dodgers.
Go Dodgers. Go Dodgers.
We are pro Dodger here. So.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Especially after the Yankee fans last night.
Fans are fans.
They're fanatical for
a reason.
They're
fanatical. I mean, you know, if you're a Yankee fan, you're going, God love them. That was a good for them.
Now, And now I just have this, like, as you as a Dodger fan, are you out in the bleachers shirt off? And is that how you spend your off season?
I never did
Dodger
that.
Dog?
Never did that. Nope. You know, painted up blue, you know, blue face. I never could get behind that because it had to come off. And
yeah, well, they go to the ocean.
That's true. No, that's not me. Nope.
All right. Jerry, appreciate you, man. Thank you for coming in.
Danny, thanks.
No, thank you.
We will, well, I'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, it is tomorrow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to go back.
That's the thing about the travel schedule. Ducks leave an extra day early when you head over to the Eastern time zone. So it is a little bit new when you bump everything forward one day further. All right, let's get to hour number two of the radio program. We still got to get Blazers have got a big one coming up tonight as they play against the Clippers. Whoa.
The other LA team.
The other LA team. And there's a little bit of controversy in college football as the helmet comms are now coming to a head. We have a new cheating scandal potentially in the world of college football.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.